Drunk on Comics Special Edition, talking to the guys from Thomas Alsop.
Yeah, guys, this week we have a very special interview, a really fun chat with Chris Miskevich and Pally Schmidt, the writer and artist on the Boom Studios 8-issue miniseries Thomas Alsop. If you guys haven't picked this one up, you really need to.
Yeah, it takes a subject matter that we've talked about this book many times, so if you're a listener to the show, you've heard us rave about this book, but it's just awesome to get to talk to them about their thoughts, their ideas, and how they came about to make this thing happen.
Yeah, so crack a beer, grab a juice, whatever it is that you guys like, sit back, and enjoy the show. This is it's one of my favorite interviews we've done from one of my favorite books in the last number of years. So enjoy, guys. We'll be back after it's done. We've got Chris Miskevich and Pally Schmidt here. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you.
Pally, welcome for the first time to the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here. Wherever I am. Are you guys?
We are in Michigan. So, okay. we share a time zone with Chris, and that's the, and the northern climate. What was that?
I share everything else with Chris.
It certainly feels that way at this point, doesn't it?
Now, you guys, the last issue of Thomas Alsop, issue 8, just came out here this last week. And holy shit, guys. I talked about it on our show this last, this last weekend. And I still don't quite know how to talk about it, A, without spoiling it. That's the hardest part. Because I do not want to spoil that ending. You guys know that I've been loving this book since it came out, and I've grown to love it even more as it's gone on. And that's a hard thing. So, cheers to you guys first, I guess, for that. Because, it's very tough once you get past that second or third issue to keep a lot of readers' attention.
Agreed.
At this point. So maybe we just start with that. I mean, when you're creating your stories, How do you go about the pacing to keep people interested and keep growing it without blowing your load in the first issue or two?
That's pretty. I'll do this one. I'll take this. There were three reveals, pretty much, right through this series. There's the there's the reveal at the end of issue 2 where he finds out that the 3,000 souls are still trapped at Ground Zero. There's the second reveal then that was at the beginning of issue 5 where he tells everybody on the David Drake show, hey, this happened. All these guys are down. The 3,000 souls are still trapped there. I'm going to do a televised mass exorcism. And then the unexpected third, moment was what I guess we're not quite talking about or trying to avoid saying in issue 8. It was always kind of, I kind of planned those beats, and they also kind of happened naturally writing the story out. I didn't want to put that in the first issue at all. It would have made no sense. It would have been like just really blowing your load. it really would have. Like, hey, and then here's issue 1. Ha! Look what we're doing. And I didn't want to do that. This was never going to be it's not a fast story, although it moves fast for chunks of it. It's really dense and there's just a lot of stuff going on per sequence. So, that felt like if you were also watching it as a television show, like issue 1 and 2 would be your first issue. I mean, your first episode, like that would be the pilot. At the end of that, you'd be like, holy shit, what the hell is this TV show? When is this episode 2 coming out?
Yeah.
You could possibly be like, how dare they, these guys, they're being really bad guys, bringing this into American culture, talking about that event in this manner, the back and forth of it. But I guess long and short, it was naturally sort of they went through the when I was writing the story, man. That beat just felt right in episode two. The second beat of look, here we go. This is really what's going on happening in episode five. Just felt like, you know, you kind of got that episode 1, 2, 3, and 4 first chunk of the story. He lays it out at the end what he's going to do. And I felt like you needed a little bit of lightning in case, well, A, it's mid-series, people are coming in, then maybe grabbing that issue. And what did we do? Was it that it was like page 3 or something? We basically explained the entire plot of page 3. Right, Pally? Was that it? That sequence. I don't even think I had it fully scripted. I had the dialogue up, and it was just like, you know, go. And Pally, you kind of put together those 5 frames.
Yeah, I did actually improvise a little bit on that with where I cross-cut to a lot of people watching this on their TVs and computer screens. So you just see the reaction of the American audience as they're faced with this madman who's now going to do an exorcism at the ceremony for 9/11. Just it's terrible. just blowing up his career on live television there.
Now, Pally, actually, that kind of excuse me. I'm flipping through issue 8 here, you know, as we're speaking, and one of the parts that really hit me was when Emma goes to, you know, the Trinity Church. And now I've been there. I've only been to Manhattan one time, but that was one of the places that I went and saw. And I mean, it's just such an amazing and beautiful place. Have you been there? Have you been to these places, or are you using, photo reference, or what's your, because you're in Denmark.
Okay. I don't remember ever going to Trinity Church, in fact, but I've been to New York several times, and Chris even took me on a location scout tour one time. I was with my family, so we didn't stay very long at all these different bars and stuff.
that was my next question.
Yeah, we shot some footage, and it's great when you get to have that kind of the feeling of the place. Mm-hmm. I'm not a very meticulous artist. I mean, a lot of the backgrounds in the actual comic book are kind of blurry and non-concrete, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But still, I hope I managed to get the feeling across of what it's like there. So it's more about the smells and the people and the sounds and the feeling of the air almost. I mean, I'm trying to embed that into my art, not so much trace photo reference as exactly as it is. It's more of a
I'm
not sure if that's impressionism or expressionism, but it's an ism for sure.
Well, yeah, I'll call it emotionalism, because your ability to draw the feelings out of the areas it does a great job, at least for me as a reader. So I really, really liked it. Now, as far as your art style, because you've got a fairly unique look for what's going on in comics, especially right now. What are you using? Are you standard pencil and ink? Are you using brushes? What are you using?
Well, I'm inking with a pencil, actually, like a regular lead pencil, minor, you know, one of those. You click them and the little tip comes out.
Yep.
Because they stay sharp, so I use those to ink with, and then I go over it with an ink wash after. It's a watercolor wash, but I do it all in black and white with brushes.
Okay.
And a lot of water, and just splash it all over the pages, and then later I scan it in, and I add the colors in Photoshop with different sneaky techniques.
I was curious if you were doing watercolor or not.
I think in 2.8 there are quite a few Photoshop effects, specifically at the exorcism, the all the souls flying around and stuff. I went overboard with filters and stuff for that, but usually I try to just stick with what's already there on the page in the ink wash.
Well, yeah. Now that splash page in particular, though, I mean, I can understand why, because those effects that you used really added a level of movement to that static image that would have been hard to convey. I think
that image was great, guys. That whole, I mean, I'm cutting in here, but my God, the stuff he did on this issue, it's just great. It's great.
It is. I mean, that the perspective on it's fantastic, but, it's one of those images where it's like, I don't know, for me as a reader, there was a sense of relief at that point. You know, it's like, oh my God, I can breathe again for a minute, you know, because it had built up so much in this story up to this point that you're like, thank God. Because, you know, the one thing that you never want to happen is have a tragedy on top of a tragedy where these souls weren't able to be released, which, you know, the way you were writing this, I mean, no offense, that was a possibility because everything was a possibility.
Sure. Absolutely. So. We wanted to keep it also. I wanted to keep it. We want to keep it. You know, will this happen up until the very last moment that it does? Right. And also, is he completely insane the entire time this is all going on through the whole series? You know,
right? Yeah, I think that if I may, you asked about the pacing and how we managed to keep people's interest. I think what managed to keep my interest was that Thomas has so many faces that he's putting on. He has one for himself and one for us, the reader, and he has one for the people who are watching his show. And
right.
Then he has face that, you know, the real Thomas that he sometimes lets people look at for a minute. He has so many personalities going on, and whenever he has a scheme or a ploy, you're not sure if it's for real or if he's running some kind of scam. I mean, he has so many douchebag remarks. One, I just love when he points to his own face. His family is asking him to tone it down for a bit or just lay low, and he just points to his own face saying, media sensation. I just love that. That's what keeps the interest. And monsters, of course, smoke monsters and stuff, so...
All right, well, I have a question kind of for both of you revolving around the same thing. Now, all 8 kind of scripts were kind of pre-planned already, but Chris, was there anything major after you had it all said and done that you just like, shit, I need to throw that in there, and it kind of threw it off? And then Pele, having all those scripts, how much, I don't know, easier, tougher was it for you to do your job drawing, knowing everything that was going to happen?
I think it was a huge help that I knew where this story was going from the beginning. I mean, it was a huge help in convincing me to do the book, and it was also just because of the reveal in 8, it was essential that I knew where it was going, or I couldn't put in the hints, that the little things that we needed for that particular thing that we're not talking about to be revealed and make sense. I needed to know what was going on, and we've been very open. I mean, we've talked about, you know, stuff that's not even in the book about his background and his future and whatnot. So we've had total disclosure across the continents here, I think. And I think that's been a huge help. That I could always text Chris, you know, and hey, what's this? Is this the same box that he has in issue 2? And help me out here. And at the same time, he was really just amazingly open to my suggestions whenever I wanted to maybe cut a line or split a panel that he'd written something for as one panel, and I wanted to split it into 2 or 3. It was never an issue.
You want, whenever you're working with somebody, I mean, I've looked at it like I did music forever, and, you know, when I was younger, and doing this stuff now with artists, whatever the hell they want to draw, or they're more into drawing, or getting jazzed about when they're going to stare at a page for 15 hours, you know, like, I'm going to stare at this one page for 15 hours of my life. Yeah, whatever. I looked at like most of Pallet's, most of the things he wanted to do were better than what I had scripted. And B, it was just what I just said. It was like, yeah, you want to draw that? Go. Yes. Do that. Of course. Do that. You know, instead of going, no, that's got to all be crammed into one. Not that great shot.
You had some things you wanted in there, like the lawyer you wanted based on,
friend. That's true.
You had these characters that you wanted to be based off of real people.
It's true. A lot of the looks of a lot of looks of the people we have in this are based off of people that, you know, I know or we know at this point. And we also, right. you know, we dropped people in there as the series went on as well. When Thomas gets beat up in issue 7.
That was my idea to play.
Yeah, it was a great idea. Do you guys know the, they do a podcast out of Brooklyn over here, the guys in Pete's Basement. You ever listen to their thing?
I've heard of them, but I haven't listened to them now.
It's really fun. They're fun guys. They all got, you know, they found Thomas Alsop with issue 1, just like everybody else, and were floored by the fact that I'm from Greenpoint. The places I referenced, they all knew. There was one thing I remember them saying in their first podcast that was like, he bases this out of, like, you know, Calvary Cemetery. Who hasn't had sex with their girlfriend there? Things like that, you know, and it was just like, they were so cool. Like, they lost their mind. Where is this guy? We're going to invite him down. And they were, like, we've direct messaged each other a bunch through Twitter and have not yet met, but there's going to be a horrible drinking night, I think, here in Brooklyn with these guys soon and everybody else.
Yeah, but a lot of it is based on, I remember last time I was in New York, we were driving the cab to the hotel, and we drove down Messerole Street. I'm like, wait, that guy's in the comic. What? Yeah. He's real. So all of these names come from real locations and real people, I think. They even based Bliss on a real character, right?
Yeah, Nizaya Bliss is Nizaya Bliss, although I made him, that's one of my flubs where I kind of needed him 100 years earlier than he existed. But, you know, maybe he did. Maybe my version did exist 100 years earlier. History is wrong.
Based on true-ish facts.
But we threw those Pete's, the Pete's Basement gang in as the guys that beat the shit out of Thomas. they loved it. They were on their podcast. They're like, it's us. Look at this. Da-da-da. It was really cool. So I've had a ball doing that. As far as, like, you know, going back to your question with this, because the story is so dense, I mean, you can now look at stuff that's referenced, you know, in issue 8. You can go back to 1, go back to 4, or go back to and be like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. It's all been here the whole time. Because it was going to be so, you know, to the decimal point with things, like, there was no way to do this without having the full season, you know, ready and done and handed over, you know, and gone, like, all right, Pally, this is basically what I want to do. What do you think? And, you know, it was just like madness. Like, literally, I remember, like, the first time you read through, like, whatever, the first draft, it was like 140 pages or something. Just so much, oh my God, so much dialogue that Miscavige guy just was typing the type, it felt like. yeah, I remember you were just like, wow. Yeah, I remember, like, what do you think? You're like, yeah, let's do this. But wow, that's gigantic. And then as we got deeper into it, you know, like the amount of documents that I have just in my, you know, my Alsop Bible folder, a document with the armory items to keep a list of that, a bunch of them that haven't shown up yet that are in there as well.
Yeah, speaking of those, I'm, you know, trying to Google, you know, some of them, and I really think that the internet is lacking on having an armory, like, Wikipedia entry. Like, you need to really get on that and just make up stuff that might not even be used, but that's one of my favorite parts of this series is, what's he going to pull out of the bag next? You know, what right. thing is he going to use that, holy shit, that's awesome.
I'll tell you what, my favorite was the vest.
Oh, man, I love that idea. Right, isn't that a great thing? Love that vest. Want that vest.
Yeah, yeah, that was the...
I also want the flame coat. I want a flame coat, man.
Yeah, no, like, that vest was my favorite thing in the world. I'm like, that is sweet. You know, and, of course, I'm sitting there and I'm talking about it with my girlfriend, and she goes, wonder if they could make that into a purse, and I'm sitting there going, oh my god, every woman would be in heaven, because they all have so much crap.
That's a great idea, actually. But, purse of many pockets.
So, Chris,
Go ahead.
How many relics do you have, like, come up with for ideas, roughly? Or do you have your Alsop Bible handy with...
Give me a sec here. I do have it handy since I'm in my computer. What did we use, man? Hold on a sec. Thomas Alsop, Thomas Alsop, Thomas... Hey, how about this folder that says Thomas Alsop? I think we used something like around 12 to 15 in this. And I have something like... Man, I think that I have about 40-something of them in that document right now. Here we go. And they're just some fun stuff I'd love to get into later. The one addition that he asked, like, did I throw anything in the script that wasn't in the initial, you know, first 8 issues other than just, I think this was probably the one body of work I have, like when you're being punished in school and you got to write the same sentence over and over and over again.
Yeah.
This is like the one thing that I have read and edited more than anything I've ever written. You know, once we got through editorial, once we started actually getting into it, I've read this fucking script so much in my life.
It's you didn't stop after we lettered it. You would I go had to and keep going. Yeah. Stuff.
What was kind of wonderful about the process is like Darren Bennett, our letterer, who is just a saint. I mean, he's such a great. He's great. It's just that when he came on board and Boom hooked us up with him, and that was, you know, all right, it's the three of us now, let's go. It just kind of flew, and I got this, I'd get to do a lettering pass, basically, at the end of every issue right before it went to press, and I really enjoy that because of, you know, little things you just didn't really see till you saw it on the page, and well, maybe we should bold that letter. Maybe we should da-da-da-da-da-da there. Maybe we could da-da-da-da-da here with the text. And that was fun. I've never done that before. I really got into that. That was great. Like a great little thing to do with this. But the one thing I added in was his, what was it? The, what the hell was the name of it? The coin that he uses at the end. The your number's up. What was it? It was 93. It was also our armory item. Here we go. 93, your number's up, which using the, allowing the user to call anyone they want anywhere on a public phone, the little.
Oh, God, yes, that was awesome.
That was one of the only, like, kind of like, you know what? How's he going to call this guy? I'm just like, what am I going to, I was like, that would be great. And I'm like, who would have come up with that? I'm like, totally his dad.
Calling the mayor.
And I was like, it would totally be, what would it be? It would just be a fucking quarter that they enchanted and put on like a little silver chain. He just puts it in. He says whatever he wants, you know. And then like I'm like, well, this is the first cell phone. And I think I threw that in there in a line. Did you know that my dad invented the first cell phone? Kinda. And I was like, throwing that. And I was very happy with that last minute. Also, Mama's Boy. That was the skateboard.
Ah, yes.
That was also a last minute addition. I remember texting Pally. At some point, like when he was finishing up on 6, it was like skateboard during the car chase, issue 7. The you know, Albert, the submissive, he buys it from him. I'd love it if we could have it with a sparkle script that says Mama's Boy along the top of the.
Did I draw that? I can't remember.
I don't think it made it in, but to me.
But I edited out his entire speech because I thought it would be more fun if he had a gag ball in his mouth the entire time. That was the one time where I did 2 versions of it and sent it to Chris, and he was like, ah, damn, you're right.
I looked at it and I sat there and I was like, ah, but I really, the dialogue, it's really funny kind of back and forth between them, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ah, oh, shit, though, this is better. This is just better, man. He's totally, and like, I think I said, I'm like, you win, do it. And like, it, by the time it goes, like, to, you know, Ian and Jasmine, oh, God, we've got, like, you know, we had to change, because it's all ages, technically, the book, we had to change something about blowjob in the dialogue. There was, like, you could kind of clearly say, he was like, so I give Plumber a blowjob. I could see poor Ian Brill sitting there, like, you know, in California, just writing me, like, oh, God, Chris, you can't say blub jub. B-L-L-B-B-J-blub-blub-dub, you know, and I, like, when I got that edit, I was like, oh, my God, I'm shaking my head, like, okay.
That scene was...
No blub jub, everybody.
That scene, though, just in general, had me chuckling, but I was so fucking uncomfortable at the same time. I'm like, you guys did a great job, you know, because I'm not feeling real good about this, but I like it.
we never got into it, but I kind of assume that you would, Thomas is the kind of guy, and his, you know, like the majority of his adventures, big or small, through New York, this being like a pretty big moment in his life, this, you know, this week that we follow him on during those 8 issues, all the, like, the little smaller tales and shorts I've written, I kind of always just assume he's getting dragged through the river, running through the train stations, like waist hot deep in something in the sewer, and just always destroying his cell phones. Like, I just think that, like, he's just got, he's like, whoever takes care of him, and, you know, there's got to be a scene where he just shows up, he's like, new cell phone, please. You know, like, just somebody handing him an iPhone 6, iPhone 5, iPhone, here you go, here's the 4S. He's like, what'd you do with it? Don't ask.
Now, you kind of mentioned Ian Brill as your editor. How much influence, you know, did Ian or your other editors have in, you know, the creation of Thomas Alsop?
None on the creation. I mean, we came over with this to Boom, and, you know, when we pitched it, our pitch package was mad, just like craziness, like the entire 8 issues, like something like a 30-page breakdown of the entire story. Like, here you go, if you don't want to read that, read that. And the first issue art, the Dead Uncle 12-page short, and then also we filmed. I was busy filming a ton of web series that year with my cousin director Chris Piazza, and we kind of rallied everybody at the end of, well, basically when I was bankrupt from spending money on all of that and just for like no cash and a lot of pizza and beer, did the Thomas Alsop little trailer, and we pitched all of that to Boom. That was what we were throwing around. I've talked to people and other, you know, writers about that, and everybody just shakes their head like, you're insane. That's gigantic. Who were you pitching, a TV show? Kind of went about it in that way. Ian got handed this, and Ian and Jasmine were great. They kind of had a deal. I felt like they were our buffer with any kind of fear about the 9/11. Plot points to the series. And, you know, we had conversations about that. We had a couple of conference calls about that. Boom was really careful about bringing their brand in any kind of a negative light. And, you know, you totally can see how that could go that way, you know, unless you kind of go through the rest of the series and you see it's more, we're not mocking or, you know, taking the piss out of 9/11, it's actually, this is a 9/11 survivor's story. If you really want to do it, it's the story of, you know, all of those people who kind of have lost people in that event. And however, Thomas's is a little extreme, his version of it. So they were, you know, we were always explaining that all the way through. They always knew the end point, you know, the ending beat, the issue 8 reveal that I just kind of said.
No, you didn't fully give it away yet. So
I was really kind of proud of them. It was interesting to see how careful they were being about this. And I think
also had the idea of doing the little essays in the back.
Yeah, that was them.
And go in deeper, and that was a great idea. It really helped to ground it in reality, because you are in New York and lived there all your life, and that's part of what the story is.
Somebody said, one of the reviews we got was it was a love letter to New York, which is really nice. It's a great little tagline on that, and I guess it is in a way. But they, you know, that was a great idea, doing the essays, and I think that helped people kind of get comfortable with the shock of it as well. So editorial was there trying to mold this thing all the way through to be kind of the most, I don't know, palatable version of it that it could be. It was just, there was that initial fear whether or not a major American publisher could put out something that was taking the story of 9/11 in this way. And thankfully, it seems like just about everybody kind of got what that really was, you know, as it went on. I'm so happy we never got one review from anybody that was just like, fuck you two guys doing this. You know, how dare you use that event?
Well, you know, I know that you know, we talked about it the last time you were on, Chris, and I know I've talked about it on our show as well in reviewing other issues, that, yeah, this is about as touchy of a subject as you're going to, you know,
absolutely
get into, but you both handled it with such care and gave it such white glove treatment that this event, for as absolutely terrible as it was handled with such grace and care that I don't think anybody could be pissed at you. Because
thank you. Seriously, thank you for saying that. That's,
well, I just like the writing of, like, outside perspective, being a reader reading it, you did a phenomenal job. But even just writing the reactions of people in this world, like when there's people that really thought he was going to save them and kind of cheering them on, but then having all those people, the police go after them, it's like those are real life reactions to this event that you captured and had in these pages that is like, man, this is such amazing work.
Well, yeah, and it's... Wow. It's
nice. Thank you.
Well, it sparked a little conversation on our show here, you know, this past weekend when I was reviewing issue 8, and, you know, we talked about how, you know, in this world and society and culture, you're going to have some people that are going, yeah, save all those people, but you're going to have other people that, you know, maybe they're hardcore Christians that believe that those souls are already gone, and they find it offensive to think that it could be there, and... You know, it really was well done to actually show just all sides of it in a very real way. So, yeah, awesome job, guys.
And Derek gives you thumbs up that you can't see.
Yeah. And I'm lifting my glass, too. Now, you guys talked about pitching, you know, your stuff to Boom. What's it like breaking into comics? I mean, do you guys have suggestions for people that are trying to get in?
Yes. I could do this real quick. I've been trying to, you know, if you're a writer, it's impossible. If you're an artist who can write, well, you got a better chance. And if you're an artist, you know, you're what people look at first with comics. It's a visual media. If you're a writer, it's impossible to break in. And I used to just look at people when they'd say that, other writers, and be like, you dick, why are you saying that? You know, like, why are you being a dick? Just, what did you do? I'm not asking it again in the end, just, what did you do? And everyone has a completely different story about how they managed to get their first something. And it's really, as far as writers go, it's really like, what? You know, it just makes no sense. There's no clean road. My advice, man, if you are, you know people in your town who are making comics, make a comic with them. I mean, make some shorts. Anthologies are great, and totally get your webcomic going. Before you know it, there will be people that you are working with or learning to work with that are just better than you expected, and something happens. Like, I ended up getting on Activate Comics. Dean Haspiel started that out in, I don't know, 2005 or 6. It was pretty much like the first webcomics platform that got a ton of mainstream press when it came out. And I think they had something like 80 or 90 original graphic novels on it at one point that were being updated weekly. You'd put up a couple of pages, a chapter. Everybody had a different thing. And I put something up there called Everywhere, which is how Palais and I actually began working together. So here's case in proof. Get a webcomic going. Palais, what did I do? We did Fish Everywhere. The idea of Everywhere was great. It was that you wake up, and for no explainable reason, millions, billions of one species of animal is all over the place running around. And they were all, like, you know, 6 to 10 page stories, completely set in the middle. You just sort of, like, somebody walks out and there's horses everywhere, kittens everywhere, fish everywhere. And this did well enough for me as an indie, you know, an indie writer to get, like, you know, you could read them. They were good. I worked with about 15 different artists on that, and I was really proud of that work. But that led the road to everywhere else I got. So that's my two cents, man. Just make comics. It's just...
Yeah, and again, as an artist, when you're approached by somebody who wants to do a project with you, if you don't have anything to show for, if you don't have anything written and it's already out there, it's a tough sell. So when Chris gave me a printed out, he made this pamphlet of one of his stories that when we first met at Mocha, where I'm pretty sure, I'm about 99% sure that he pitched me the story of Thomas Alsop right there on the con floor the first time we met. And I didn't think it had anything to do with me. You know, I was just, it was my first time at a U.S. con, and I'd been in the country for 2 days, and I didn't really want to get involved in anybody else's kind of work. Because I do my own stuff as well, right? And here was this guy just chatting, and then we got along famously. And he gave me this pamphlet, and I walked away and read it, and I texted him back like 5 minutes because it was good writing, and that just popped. So we started doing the little shorter thing. That would be my advice as well. If you want to convince an artist to work with you, don't come with your 200-page graphic novel and ask them to do that, because nobody can commit to anything that size. But Chris has this little, that's 5-10 pages max. It's black and white if you want, and you can do whatever you want. Like, okay.
It's pretty much what I was like. What do you want to do, man? There's no pay. Yeah. Hey, bro, you want to hang out later?
Right. But the writing was good, and Chris was a dream to work with, so we just went from there. But I have a different breaking in story, because I thought I broke in 2012 when my book, The Devil's Concubine, maybe it was 11, came out in the U.S. from IDW. It was published in Denmark, where I am and where I'm from, in 2008. And then it came out over there in 2011, and I was like, yeah, I'm in. And then it was a revolving door, and my next book got turned down, and then I was out on the street again. So it was like, that was weird. I'm not sure that I was in, but there's a huge difference, I think, for the U.S. market, at any rate, that when you publish one book, that just drowns in the mass of other stuff that's coming out. But when you do a monthly book, and you have guys like you talking about it and people tweeting about it every month, and you're in front of readers every month, that really helps spread the attention a lot further, if that makes sense.
Yeah, hopefully you'll be able to continue that, bringing in new readers when the trade comes out too. You know, that's always the plan.
It seems like there's a system in place. I just never thought about it.
I feel like this thing is going to fly when the trade comes out. I think when people are just going to eat this, you know, it's like, all in one book. I just read that last night. What's next? Like, I really think people are just going to go through this book like it's butter. You know.
On the back end, I was sitting here going, "Hey, Chris, can I see the last issue? Can I see it? Hey." Because I was going nuts. I'm like, you can't leave me hanging. Like, that's one of the best and worst things about a monthly book. You know, as a fan myself, you get that book that you're like, my God, I have to know more. Mm-hmm. And that might be one of the reasons why I have such a love affair with this book, because you guys strung me along like that girl that wouldn't like ever, you know, say yes to a date. And, so it's always that hope. But so now we're at the end of this, and it clearly can go on. It could end here, but I pray to God it doesn't. But it clearly could go on. I know, Chris, you said before you've got ideas.
I have something's wrong with my mind, and I basically, I don't just pitch when I'm pitching. I pitch I won't pitch until I have the entire six arcs done. You know, like, here you go, if you want to read it too, I'm pitching this, you're going to say no, I just spent the last 3 months writing the things. I have, I've written out, you know, the second volume of this is done, although I'm editing it forever. I recently finished about 90% of what would be volume 4 of Allsopp. I just kind of got really deep into this, and since it's, you know, this is the moment in my life when I'm doing it, I figured I may as well put a lot of these first drafts down. So yeah, we're really hopeful that the trade sells well, and you know, that the response continues with this thing, and that Boom greenlights a second volume. I just like kind of, now this is totally geeky, like, but I don't feel right leaving him where we left him. Does that make sense? I just don't want to leave him on the floor. Now, can we leave him on the floor? Yes. And, you know, and was this fine as one and done? Sure. This was a great book. But I kind of left a lot of things unsaid and a lot of plots in there. I seeded in for what will and could be, you know, volume 2, volume 3, volume 4. We do have a plan, and believe it or not, nobody has a clue what the hell this is really about yet. Like the actual floor of what the hand is and where that comes from, and that's some pretty weird. Let's just say Pally's got some strange cosmic shit to paint someday.
Well, you know, the one thing I enjoyed about this is that, you know, I mean, really, for as much as every cupboard and closet and window that you closed, you opened two more doors that they could be exiting out of. And that's why I think this is such a fun book, because there's a lot for the reader to fill in with their own imagination as well. And I think that's what makes, it's one of the things that makes this work is, you know, between the art and the writing, you allow the reader to use their own brain in this story to fill in the minuscule gaps. And that's such a powerful tool that very few creators, I think, out there are able to do, both artistically and from the written side. So,
man, thank you.
Yeah, this is just one of those super fun books that it's not really fun in the tone and the seriousness of it, but it's fun as a reader experience. And I got into it. Now, I have one other little kind of offshoot question. I was looking through the last couple pages, you know, that you guys wrote at the end of issue 8, and you guys got fan art.
We got fan art.
Yeah.
Do we have it up on the site? Did you put it up there?
It's on. Yeah, it's on thomasalt.com. Oh,
okay.
The news section there in the blog somewhere, that it's down there.
Yeah, Elizabeth, the fan.
Nouveau, something like that?
Nouveau. I'm sure I'm butchering it. But she's I believe a French artist, and she's been great. Like we you know, someone else that we met just through Twitter that we'd never meet, that we haven't really met, you know, kind of a thing. But she did a little fan art thing up there with Richard and Eddie Mazzara and Thomas in front of Allsopp Manor. And we were just like, what the hell? We got fan art! Like, it was so cool. Are you kidding me? This is fan art. Like, you know, so that was...
I was geeking out when we got five chained waif like boys from you guys. That was,
yeah.
She's been really fun. I ended up, what did I end up doing? I ended up, like, bullshitting with her a couple times. Like, well, what do you think is going to happen? And she had some great ideas, man. She had something. At one point, she wrote, I'm like, so who do you think that? She goes, and I think I know who Eddie Mazzara is. I was like, oh, yeah? Who's Eddie? she wrote back, I think Eddie is the island. And I was like, whoa, that's a great idea.
Like, thank you.
That would have been an absolute fantastic idea to do, too. But, you know, no, Eddie is not the island. That's sad.
Right.
Now, guys, before we wrap this up, because we probably should let you go at some point so you can get back to your real lives and all that, but do you guys have any conventions or appearances planned here for 2015?
Yep. What are we doing?
SDCC, obviously.
Yeah, we'll be at San Diego.
Pick up our Eisner Awards.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I'm, what am I doing?
Unless they can just mail them, I don't know.
You're a dick. All right, what do I do? I'm doing San Diego. I'm doing New York. You know, we're doing the Copenhagen Comics Convention. Correct? Is that what is that? Is that what?
Yeah.
What was that? June.
When
is that, pal? No idea when that is. I think we're doing. I'm going to. You know, I'm going to go hang out in Copenhagen and probably forget a few days in Christiana as well. I really like that little part. And I'm either doing Baltimore or SPX. I think I'm going to go down for it. But it's about all I've got in my head at the moment. But you know,
well,
here's a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Favorite part in the. You have a favorite moment over the 8 issues, or a favorite thing, or something like that? That you keep thinking back to?
The two that I keep going back to are when he first goes down to Ground Zero, end of issue 3, I think that was. And honestly, the gut punch that you threw in at the end of the last issue. Although my favorite moment of Thomas as a character was I think it was that issue 7? In the bar where, everybody's coming after him and he pulls in the, hey, I'm, pulls out Twitter, gets everybody to come down. That was my favorite Thomas point because you're like, you're smart, you're cocky, you just beat the shit out of these guys with your brain. And I loved that. That was probably my favorite point.
My favorite point, and Pele, this was just freaking amazing, was that part where you see the spirits making up the towers. That page just still to this day, just mind-bogglingly awesome. Like, I've never seen something as beautiful as that. And wow. It was just amazing.
I would love to take credit for that, but it's in the script. I mean, and I was freaking out from the fact of drawing 3,000 people in perspective like that, forming two towers.
That's totally madness.
Shitless. That I wouldn't be able to pull it off. So I'm glad that I've managed to pull it off, at least for you. So,
well,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you guys nailed this book. I mean, you really did. I mean, like, you know, and, well, I think I talked about issue 1 and 2 back to back, and as a rule, I don't do that.
Yeah, there were a couple of reviewers that did that, and it was, and they all were saying the exact same thing. They're like, yeah, we never do number 1 and 2 together. We just don't do that. You know, this is a first. I think it was a first for Pete's Basement. It was a first for someone else too, and that that was strange. You know, I heard that, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, and then I heard that again, and I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then you hear it again.
Yeah, and they're like, all right, that's okay.
Because I could have reviewed every single book every month it came out, you know, as my highlighted book for the week, whether it was for, you know, our off-the-shelf segment or the Indie Turnpike segment, either way, without a problem. But I'm like, I have to give a little bit of, you know, the spotlight to somebody else this month. You know?
Hey, Geek Sushi went to town on this, and they were really wonderful. Peter, I think it was, they wrote a review of every single issue, and the reviews they were writing, you were just like, what? Like, are you kidding me? You feel this way from this? Wow. Like, it was, I'd read, you know, issue whatever would come out, and
Comics Bastards, Dustin Capillo, every issue as well. Great reviews.
Right? You would just read these reviews. I would read these reviews. Like, we would, and just be like, you got to be kidding me. Like, how does someone? I guess I was just really floored at the fact that people were getting this much, digging it that much, and then, you know, they found a friend in Thomas, which is what you want. When at least what I wanted when I started collecting comics at, like, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, you cared so much about Peter Parker, you cared so much about, you know, that character on the X-Men or something, whoever it was, that, you know, each month you were like, oh my God, what happened over there? And that was driving me bananas getting that. I've gotten so many, I don't know if you're getting this right now, Pally, I've been getting hit with tons of direct messages on Twitter from people who read it, and couple of people were like, you know, I was in tears over issue 8, and that's great. That's amazing to hear. I get humbled by these words, and it's just sort of like, wow, this book hits some people.
Yeah,
and it hit some people in a good way. I really, you know, the credit to us, you know, patting ourselves on the back here, but you know, to Boom as well, man. Like, they took a chance on us. Who the, you know, Polish guy and the handsome Danish guy. Let's get these two guys. We'll bring this. This is not a book. It's a hard sell to a major publisher just because of the 9/11 part of it. But getting past that, then it's such a credit to, like, you know, Boom is like a publishing company right now, going like, wow, yeah, we really took a chance on this, and look what you can do in comics, man. Look what you can do in comics.
Yeah,
you know, you could put something. I'm not going like, wow, man, look at what we did. This is the deepest thing ever. But you could do so much in comics, so much more than just, yeah, as much as I, you know, my stack is full of guys doing it, guys in suits, superhero suits punching each other. I get all that stuff every week too. You can do so much more.
Well, I mentioned on our podcast something along the lines that, you know, how this book was, like, all about, you know, the awakening of Thomas as a character, but it was also an awakening for me to, you know, kind of see what can be done in comics when you're looking at it as an art form. So, you know, I mean, it was just...
Thanks, man.
You guys really did a beautiful, beautiful job on this. So, yeah, I mean, in case people can't figure it out already, yes, as soon as that, if you haven't picked up the individual issues, when the trade hits, go buy three copies, one for yourself, you know, one to give a friend, and then a loaner copy, you know, so it'll be worth it. I already know I'm going to buy a loaner copy. You know, I've got all the issues, but I'm buying a trade, because this is going to be one of those books that I'm going to hand around to people going, read this. Don't argue with me. Just take it and read it, and then give it back, and we'll talk later.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, guys, I think we should probably wrap it up here, but... Where can people find you online?
Valley?
Well, yeah, you asked something about advice earlier, and I forgot to mention I have this site called comicsforbeginners.com, which is advice for young, aspiring, not necessarily young, but aspiring and beginning comics creators. I also have my own website, paletschmidt.com, and I'm on Twitter, palet_schmidt, I think it is. Yeah. And ThomasAlsop.com, where you can see the trailer with the real Thomas Alsop playing himself. It's great. So.
I was going to ask about that trailer, so I'm actually looking forward to it. You know, because Chris, I know that
he's, I like that he said the real Thomas.
Well, Chris, I know that you've said that Thomas was based on a friend of yours, but I'm sorry, I'm still looking. I see a little bit of a resemblance between Thomas and you, so
hair, man, it's just hair. Thomas was originally kind of in my, a little bit of Keanu Reeves, a little bit of like Chris Cornell. His at least his physicality, thin like that, yet tall. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, the coloring of, you know, Gaiman. You know what I mean? Like kind of like a, you know, blue eyes and dark hair. And then my friend Paul Boucher, he's an actor I worked with a ton. It's from, it's like 2011 to 13. He's been in almost everything I've filmed. I for quite a while through Trip City, which I guess you could find me at welcometotripcity.com, which was an online collective I formed with Dean Haspiel, Seth Kushner, and Jeffrey Durant. But we did a ton of web series on there, and Paul's just great. He was always there any time of day for a selfie. And we used every, you know, I think I pulled a bunch of his photos off of his Facebook after he just done like new headshots or something like that, and threw those all in the initial folder of, like, you know, I think he looks like this, Pale. You know what I mean? We had so many issues, so many images in that first reference folder. It was kind of crazy. But yeah, Paul Boucher, he's the guy in the trailer. If you see the trailer, you go, oh, I see what they did. You know. And
all right. I'm looking for that one.
The drawn character takes on a life of his own. That was kind of, he was our model. As for finding me, you know, I'm on Twitter, CM Miscavige. I've recently spoke with Chris Miscavige, who owns Chris Miscavige on Twitter. And we're going to trade Twitter URLs. It's very nice, man. He lives in Baltimore. He's a fellow Polak. We've been emailing each other on Facebook. I totally tweeted at him. Man.
Is this the photographer that takes pictures of stars and shit like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, man. The other Chris Miscavige.
Yeah.
I'm giving you a shout out, Chris. Here you go. You said you wanted 2 minutes of fame for trading the Twitter handle, and this might be it.
I honestly don't know what higher level of fame you can get than being talked about on Drunk on Comics.
But for right now, I am CMM, Chris C.M. Miscavige on Twitter. I should have my own site, which will just be chrismiscavige.com, coming in the next month or three. You should go to Comics for Beginners also. Palais site is pretty fantastic. I mean, it's just great. He's got all these video tutorials, and the guy's charming.
There's some Thomas also behind the scenes stuff as well. I put up, screen caps of whatever I'm working on and trying to explain whatever it is I'm doing.
Nice.
I'm learning as I'm going along too. So, trying to share a lot of that.
Well, guys, thank you again so much. It's been such a pleasure. And, I guess now we just sit back and wait and, look for the trade when it comes out. And fingers crossed that we'll see Volume 2 coming out. I don't know how the fuck you're going to top this, but I have faith that you will.
There's a lot of fallout, don't you think, after issue 8? Don't you think he's in trouble? I think he's in some trouble.
Tony and I are sitting here looking at each other going, how did we say anything without giving it away?
Yeah, we did. We kind of did it, didn't we? We did this. We got through this without giving it away.
Yeah.
We're like, just like Thomas, didn't you say? Or just like you guys were saying earlier, treating you like a girl who wouldn't, whatever it was, kiss on
what was it? The girl that would never say yes to one, yes to going out on a date with me or something like that? Yeah. Yeah.
We skirted around the subject like her, like she. Everybody, thumbs up. We did well. We did not give out the reveal where we find out that Thomas is. Oh.
Well, guys, thanks so much for being on our show, and we look forward to when we can talk to you guys again about Volume 2.
Great.
All right. Thanks. Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
And that was definitely fun talking to those guys.
Oh, dude, we talked to Chris here a while back. I think it was like right after issue 3, and amazing, amazing guys. Please go pick up the issues. Pick up the trade when it comes out and look them up. And we'll be back again here soon with another interview for you guys and more fun.